All right. Hey, it's good to see you. It's been a million years since we last talked to you.
Yeah, 20 years.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I proudly present to you, for your listening pleasure, We Heart Music Radio. Brought to you by the good people at We Heart Music.
Hi, this is Bo with We Heart Music Radio, and on the line with me is John Stewart from Sleeper.
Hello, everyone.
Okay, so before we talk about the reunion and the new Starshape Festival tour and all that, I'm going to ask you a little background questions just for fans who are probably not familiar with Sleeper. Is that all right with you?
Absolutely, yeah.
So can you talk to me about those early days? And I know that you guys used to be called Surrender Dorothy before you became Sleeper.
Yeah. It turns out there's more than one band with that name. It comes from The Wizard of Oz. The witch writes it in the sky with her smoke from a broomstick. And I think we were all sitting in our shared house at the time, probably quite stoned. And that happened at the end of the movie, and it just seemed like a revelation, like a message from on high, literally. So I think I suggested that should be the name of the band, and it was, I think, a really bad name, actually. And then Louise came up with a much better one later on. So that's how that happened. And then I think Sleeper's a good name because people weren't using band names that ended in ER at the time. There weren't any, I'm not sure what kind of, but it's a sort of it's like an active noun, isn't it? Or I don't know what grammatically what you'd call it. But it was a really unusual band name. And also it had a lot of the same letter. So it kind of got internal rhyme to it. Lots of E.
Lots of E's.
Yeah, literally, and that was that time. That was quite funny that you could say that. But it's obviously, and it makes the logos quite good and stuff. Surrender Dorothy is just a really bad name for a band, so we did the right thing, I think. And there were several people with that band name, I'd say. And of course, a lot of, I think, quite a few people have used Sleeper since us. And O Sleeper, that's another band. So, yeah. We're running out of band names. The world's running out of band names. It's going to be far worse than when we run out of oil. When we run out of band names, we're really going to be screwed.
Speaking of similar band names, I know that there is I think it's like a punk band in America called Sleeper as well. And I think your record label ended up buying them out. But for a brief moment, you guys were known as Sleeper UK.
That's right. And if you look on YouTube, there's a very funny, there's a stand-up in America doing a show. I can't remember his name. And he has some interaction with the crowd where he asks them, like, something is some kind of crowd interaction, and somebody from the band tells that story to the stand-up, and he makes a very funny joke about it. So that guy's still dining out on that story. They came to see us when we played in America to say thanks for the car we bought.
With Indolent Records for America, I think it was BMG, or was it? I think it's Arista, actually.
Yeah, we have an Arista one that does in America, which was probably a mistake. So they're like sort of quite a mainstream label, and I think we wanted to be a bit more indie, but you don't always get to choose that. So if you want an international label, you don't always get the final say. But they were, you know, they were okay. Louise and Andy know more about that story, and a lot of it is in Louise's memoir, which is a fantastic read. If no one's read it and they want to know the story of the band, get a hold of Just for One Day by Louise Wenner. It's a brilliant, brilliant Britpop memoir. I think it's the best one. And it's very, very funny, laugh out loud funny, and very touching and very moving. And it's all true.
So obviously you guys were kind of grouped into the Britpop movement, which I want to say actually was a good thing for you guys.
Yeah, most bands are part of a scene. It's very difficult to break through without being part of some kind of movement or scene. So you knew it was going to happen. Blur put out their first album and it kind of did okay. And then the second album was very much about being British. It was a reaction to America, and it didn't do so well. And then Kurt Cobain killed himself, and you knew that reaction was going to happen, the post-grunge thing. So, yeah, it was, no problem with that, really. You live and die by it. It's very, most bands that come up as part of a scene will struggle to survive that scene when it ends, but it's good. It's a good way to sort of hitch a ride into the public consciousness. So what the hell, you know, it was all right. It was a good thing. And also it was a big part of British culture at the time. So it's nice to be remembered as part of a greater thing. No one in a band really has a right to be too proud about how they're recognized. You should just be glad that people are listening to your music. That's such a great privilege. However it happens, whether it's a commercial or a bit of radio play or being involved in a scene, whether it's a regional thing or a cultural thing, people are listening to your music, mate. That's like such an amazing thing. And 20 years later, people are still listening to it and singing at you. That's such a privilege that, you can't be too precious about how it happens. That's it.
Smiles at the waiter, he winks at his friends and they laugh at her later. He's cleaning the car on his purple dash driveway. New shiny leather he got for his birthday. He reads Harold Robbins, he flirts with his neighbour. Ignores her at breakfast, he's reading the paper. He dreams of a roller, she dreams of a fast getaway. He's not a prince, he's not a king. She's not a workable or anything. It makes no sense. Another year. What kind of age is that? We'll get you here. It's nothing special. She's not too smart. It's that fashion. She stands up. I think I told you.
Hey, you know, speaking of people listening to music, you guys actually, some of your best tracks are actually hidden as kind of like B-sides, and I always love the B-sides, and, you know, obviously not a lot of hardcore fans are going to seek out some of these singles, and for example, Taddy, which was only available on the 12-inch Delicious.
If I sit here, there is still my eyes up, tighten still. Come closer and closer, I think I see you. Come closer and closer, I cannot see you.
What else? London? That's exclusive somewhere.
Yeah,
I mean,
say that word now. That's like it's an interesting thing culturally how things have moved on. You can't say that. It's so rude. You can't even write it in Facebook without people telling you off. But it comes from a Derek and Clive sketch. It was, you know, so it's a great name for a record. You'd really struggle to put that out today. But yeah, when you're doing a B-side, the pressure's off. So you just have fun. And you can do things like that particular track that you couldn't do, obviously, on an A-side or to expect to get any radio play with.
Don't slow down, look behind you.
Let's talk about the reunion. I heard a rumor that you guys were going to reform like maybe 20 years after the, you know, when the BBC was doing all that sort of Britpop, you know, 20 years later. I heard that you guys were going to reform, but obviously that didn't happen. Was there any truth to that, those rumors?
No, we'd never do it. And then I think we kind of realized that you only live once and life's quite short, and just do it. What the hell? And it seemed like the 20 years since the last show seemed, we had a bunch of options about how we might do it. And the guys who do the Star-Shaped promotion have been very supportive of us, and they were quite keen for us to do it. And we like what they do, and we just wanted to support them, I think, to a certain extent. And it pretty much came out of the blue, to be honest. I went over there for a cup of tea earlier in the year just to say hi. And they said, do you want to do it? And I thought, yeah, why not? Yeah, it came completely out of the blue, completely unplanned, total turnaround. But it was just...
Would that also explain why Deed Osman is not part of the new...
Yeah, it was completely unplanned. Deed lives the other side of the country, which isn't quite the same as... living the other side of the country in the United States, but as far as we all have, you know, lives, and we're very busy people and responsibilities, and you know, I work in music education and run a big course at a very popular school called BIM Institute, and have hundreds of students that I look after, and I'm also studying a lot, trying to finish a PhD. Lou and Andy have got family, so it's like this isn't like we. It was fairly sort of unplanned, and what the hell, let's just do it. And that we kind of realized quite early on that we were just going to have to snatch. We wanted it to work and be really good, but we were going to have to kind of meet up as and when we could to snatch rehearsal time, and it just wasn't going to work. You can't call someone who's 350 miles away and say, can you pop over in an hour? We've got an hour in our schedule to have a smash around the set. It's just not going to work. And, you know, they're a family. You know, they've got two beautiful kids, and so their weekends are, like, precious. We had this idea about getting Deed to come on a couple of tunes at the end, but it's been a very busy summer, and I think he kind of just thought, you know what, leave them to it, and you know, that door's still open, so there's nothing closed. It was just, as Deed put on his Facebook post, it was literally logistics getting in the way. So if it all works, which it's going okay, it's going very well, I see, maybe we could do something next year. That's, you know, if we plan it better.
Arms around you. You've got things tomorrow. I'll give it back tomorrow. We can post it right back to you. You'll go to the store and get some.
Hey, who is doing bass for you guys for the tour?
Kieran is a bass player. He's probably best known for his work playing with Prodigy. And he's a lovely, lovely man, and we love him very much. And he's been a great joy to work with. And he also lives around the corner, so we can just call up on, say, you three for an hour on a Wednesday night, and he can come around. And it helps, the two of us working at a music school, because there's lots of things like equipment. And with the other two musicians are ex-students who are playing with us. Amy and Nick, who are both really great to work with. So, yeah, that, and, you know, just things like borrowing equipment and that kind of stuff, and crew and all that. It's been a bit of a sort of a family affair, really. It's been really nice in that respect. It's been the best part of it for me, has been working with new people who are just really good fun to be around, and just really enjoying playing the songs. And that's been really rewarding, particularly with a couple of people, you know, who were in my class like 4 years ago. So that's great.
Is Amy and Nick doing keyboards, or what are they?
Yeah, doing? Nick keyboards and Nick's doing some extra guitar.
Played kind of like a headlining gig in Brighton, and then just yesterday did a Star Shaped Festival. That was the first one, right?
Yeah, first one last night, and it went brilliantly. It was really, really great. It's the warm up was fantastic. The show in Brighton was beyond any expectations. I think we were all very nervous, and people came from all over the country to see it. People came from Wales, which is a very long way, right across the UK. You know, that's like an 8-hour round, no, more, 10-hour round trip for those guys. And it was a little venue on the Brighton seafront. That was like 350 people. We sold it out, and the whole room just went crazy, and it was absolutely fantastic. And we knew that probably there'd be some pictures and video go out fairly quickly, and somebody put the whole thing on YouTube within about 4 hours. that's a new thing for us. But then last night we did Birmingham, and it was the same. It was really glorious, and it was a lovely venue, really, really nice venue in Birmingham, the O2 Institute. Sound was great. Everybody we worked with was fantastic, and everybody was singing along. The YouTube videos, you can see, you can just hear people singing along with the songs, which is great. And Louise was fantastic. That's been the big surprise of the live shows, because we've stayed friends for 20 years and not performed. Andy's played in a few bands and I've done a couple of things, but to be with Louise on stage again was fantastic. She's really good. She's really at home, and everybody just loves to see her up there, and it's really nice.
All right, so the rest of the Star Shaped tour is going on right now. It's basically every Saturday.
Yeah, the next 3 weeks. And then we have one in December, December 2nd, our own show in London at Shepherd's Bush Empire. We have the London show is on Saturday. We've got Nari's coming over from Japan for that one, and somebody else coming from Italy. Chenzo's coming from Italy. Yeah, so people coming from all over the world to see us play at the London show. And it's a great lineup, you know, the whole Salad, My Life Story, Dodgy, Space, Us, and the Blue Tones, who are really great live. And so it's a good day. And then we're doing Shepherd's Bush Empire on the 2nd of December, kind of a Christmas show, which will be great. That's our own show. And that'll be a really good one.
Do you have anyone lined up as opener for that?
Well, we did have, and then turns out they couldn't do it, so we're still working on that. But the tickets are going so well, looks like there's possible it might sell out even without announcing the opening act, which would be amazing.
Yeah, you still got a long way, so I'm definitely gonna. I'm pretty sure it's gonna sell out.
Mm. Yeah, but even without, you know, normally you'd expect to support to bring a few people and kind of top off sales, but if it sold out without even announcing a support, that would be fantastic.
Oh, great.
We're hoping to do some festivals maybe next year and a few other things. So.
Oh, come over to America.
Oh, yeah, that would be amazing. Yes.
John, been a pleasure having you on We Heart Music.
Great. That's it with you. Let's do it again sometime.
Yeah, let's do it again if you want to do it anytime. We'll be right back.
up the thing, riding her perfume downstairs. Makeup like glue, she danced round the room to the sound of her corduroy flares. Let's go to town, taxis all round, we could stop for a couple of beers. He looks at it all, stifles a yawn. She tries not to look like she cares. What do I do now? Are we going under? What did I do wrong? I thought we had it sorted out the other day. Maybe I'm just stupid, thought we'd try again. No one told me it was raining. Can't fix a club, they walk to a nearby pub. Watch a couple of bands. Drain in the glass, they walk home at last. Reaching for each other's hands. Nothing is said, he goes to bed. Dreaming of her on his own. She stays up a week, watching him sleep. Scared that she'll wake up alone. What do I do now? Are we going under? What did I do wrong? I thought we had it sorted out the other day. Maybe I'm just stupid, can't we try again? No one told me it was raining.
I've always wondered, but Elvis covered What Do I Do Now. Was that something that you guys was chasing, or was it just something he just wanted to do?
So he put out a single in 96 or 97, and he wanted, that was at the time when you would do a CD single, you do three or four different versions of the CD with different B-sides on people to collect, and he wanted to get a load of contemporary bands to do versions of his songs.
Right. Lush did one of his songs. You guys actually did The Other End of the Telescope? Or?
Yeah, that was it. And off his new album, to publicize a new album. We did The Other End of the Telescope, and Lush did a song. And our Jeff, Louise's brother, said, who was looking after us, said, we'll only do one if you do one of ours. I was like, what are you talking about? Just do the bloody song. He's like, no, we're not going to do one unless Costello does one of ours. So he went in the studio and knocked out a waltz time version of What Do I Do Now, which is just beautiful.
It's very different. Yeah,
it's gorgeous. And that's one of the highlights of, I think, all of our careers, is having someone like that do one of your tunes. Yeah, that's stunning. I mean, that's like, he's just such a great musician. And then we got invited to play with him, America. I mean, he's a legendary British songwriter, no question about that. So yeah, to be part of that was really great.
Quickly she came, dressed up for fame, riding her perfume downstairs. Makeup like glue, she danced round the room to the sound of a corduroy flares.
Let's go to town, taxes all round. We could stop for a couple of beers. He looks at it all, stifles a yawn. She tries not to look like she cares. What do I do now? Are we going under? What did I do wrong? I thought we had it sorted out the other day. Maybe I'm just stupid. Can't we try again? No one told me it was raining.
You know, speaking of Blondie, though, you guys did Atomic, and I've actually heard this from Danny Boyle from Trainspotting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on audio commentary, and he said that they wanted to use the Blondie version of Atomic in the film, but it costed too much money. So he ended up asking basically Sleeper to cover Atomic for him, so it would have been a cheaper way of getting that song into to the
that's
film.
Us, yeah, Low Rent Blondie, that's us.
You know what's great is if you watch Trainspotting, they actually use two of your songs. They use Statuesque as well. So that was, I thought that was pretty awesome.
Statuesque is the guitar solo, is the music in the pub when he at the end when he glasses somebody.
Yeah. Very
That's
briefly.
That's the guitar solo I fluffed last night. Yeah.
Oh pub. No. Tough for everybody else to relearn some of the chords and stuff.
Well, no, I haven't played much at all. I played in a band called Chimp in Brighton, which was very different, sort of slow, super slow indie type stuff. That was a while ago. I haven't really done any shows or anything or any recording for a long time. Andy's kept playing and does a lot of teaching drums as well, but I teach more kind of academic stuff and music business stuff.
Are you guys thinking of doing something new? Because I know you guys did have songs, Post, Pleased to Meet You.
Yeah, can't talk about that at the moment.
Okay, but, whoa. Exclusive.
You can take from that what you will. Yeah. There's a lot of interesting... Louise and Andy basically have a lot of interesting stuff on their computer hard drive, and a couple of things have popped out on the internet, and Lou will kind of deal with all that stuff, but there's a lot of interesting things coming through, so we'll see what happens.
Despite my stench, she had a face just like a welder's bench. Now that's not true, I must argue, she's the best that I will ever do.
She was not special.
She looked the part.
Lord, she was dog rough.
She had a good heart.
I think I told you right from the start.
What?
You were just an ugly bleed.
What?
Just an ugly bleed.
Go on, say it.
Just an ugly bleeder.
Oh, lad, you broke my nose now. I'll never get off with your ears.
Well, I believe the bass player's a bit desperate anyway.
Don't give me the bass player.
You can just have fun in the studio. Little Annie is one of our favourites. We think Louise were thinking about doing it live on the reunion, actually, but because it's a B-side, we didn't bother, but I think that's a great tune. I really like the vocal line on that tune. I think it's a classy song.
Used to be in this rock band, or
yeah, they kind of know because the school is full of teachers who used to be in rock bands. So you know, Martin Ruster from Gene teaches there, and a bunch of other people.
Oh, Martin, really?
Yeah, that's how we know Kieran from Prodigy as well. So it's like this little kind of super rock school staffed by ex people in rock bands, and yeah, so it's pretty good. Like that. My boss used to be in Oasis. yeah, Tony Shepherd from the Bible. So yeah, it's a good it's a great place in Brighton, BM Institute it's called in Brighton, and yeah, Brighton's a great city, and so it's just a good place to be, and you meet a lot of people in music as well. It's really nice. Whenever people come through town, they'll often pop in the school. So I interviewed Chuck D. That's my Facebook profile, me and Chuck.
From Public Enemy?
Oh, yeah. That was a great day. And, yeah, Steve Cropper from, Stax Records and all that stuff. So quite a few. Brian May from Queen, he came in. Yeah, it's a pretty... Lemmy from Motorhead came in.
Oh, before he died, probably, yeah.
Yeah. I interviewed Sean Ryder from Happy Mondays. So that was fun.
Oh my god, that's got to be hilarious.
Yeah, that was before he got he straightened out a little bit more recently. That was just before all that. So yeah, he was extremely entertaining.
You know, speaking of Chuck D, I did see Public Enemy at a music festival. And they were really late to getting on stage, and it turns out they were waiting on the guy with the clock on his chest.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And at the last minute, he basically was too sick or something to make it to the show, so Chuck D actually ended up carrying the whole show without
him. Wow. But he's a same guy. He's a super smart guy, and... He came with James Baum from the band, and it was just the most incredible. And they were supposed to do an hour interview in the school. The school was just rammed out in the room, 100 students in a room with space for about 70, and just questions. Everybody had loads of questions, and they signed everything anybody brought along. Every single student got to meet them and shake their hand, and they were late for the sound check. Because they stayed behind to make sure all the students got to see them. And what was kind of super impressive was we had she's graduated. She's a DJ now. She's doing really well in radio. But it's kind of a rock school, and there's a good mix of people. But there was one girl right at the back, and she's African, and her hand kept going up, and she wasn't. Getting picked to ask a question because she was right at the back, and James was like, "We're not finishing this interview until I answer that question from the back." He was very, very conscious that she had easily the best question. She asked this amazing question, all about the politics of the sort of black Muslim movement in America in the 80s, and a couple of sort of key people there from the time, and how the band had got on with them, Professor Griff and all that stuff. And it was a really well-worded question. She really knew her stuff, and so it was great to see that in action, because they're the real deal, man. I mean, he is he's a phenomenal intellect, Chuck D. We had a good chat for about an hour before we went on to do the interview, and I kind of know my history in terms of African American music and styles, and I think he cottoned onto that quite quickly, and so we got on really well. He was a lovely, lovely man, and yeah, that was one of my great moments of being at the school, talking to him.